Dhammadhava Kunjabihari. Gopijana Balabha Girivardhari. Gopijana Balabha Girivardhari. Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tiravana Chari Jamuna Tiravana Chari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari Gopijana Balabha Girivardhari Pedana Balabha Girivardhari Gopijana Balabha Girivardhari Gopijana Balabha Girivardhari Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Jamuna Tiravana Chari Jamuna Tiravana Chari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari Jaya Vishnupad Paramahamsa. Srimad His Divine Grace Isi Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishnavrinda Ki Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Samveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Nitai Gaur Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading text 13 from Canto 5, Chapter 19. The Island of Jambudweep is the title of the chapter.
Idam hi yogeshwara yoga naipunam Hiranyagarbho bhagavan jagadayat Yadantakale twayi nirgune mano
Bhaktya dadhito jitata jihita dushkalevara idam hi yogeshwara yoga naipunam Hiranyagarbho Bhagavan Jagadayat Yadantakale Tvayi Nirgune Mano Bhaktya Dadhito Jahita Dushkale Vara Naipunam Hiranyagarbho Bhagavan Jagadayat Yadantakale Ladies chant. Idam, this, he, certainly, yoga ishvara, O my Lord, master of all mystic power, yoga naipunam, the expert process of executing yogic principles, Hiranyagarbha, Lord Brahma, Bhagavan, the most powerful, Jagada, spoke, yat, which, antakale, at the time of death, tvayi, in you, nirgune, the transcendence, manaha, the mind, bhaktya, with a devotional attitude, dadhita, one should place, ujhita dushkalevara, having given up his identification with the material body. Translation, O my Lord, master of all mystic yoga. This is the explanation of the yogic process spoken of by Lord Brahma, Hiranyagarbha, who is self-realized. At the time of death, all yogis give up the material body with full detachment simply by placing their minds at your lotus feet. That is the perfection of yoga. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Madhvacharya says, and he quotes a verse, the source of which is not identified, yasya samyak bhagavati jnanam bhaktis tathaiva cha nischintastasya moksha syat sarvapapa kritopi tu. Translation. For one who very seriously practices devotional service during his lifetime in order to understand the constitutional position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, liberation from this material world is guaranteed, even if he has previously been addicted to sinful habits. Unquote. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Api chet sudhara charo bhajate mamananya bhak sadur eva samantavya samyak vyavasito hisa. Even if one commits the most abominable actions, if he is engaged in devotional service, he is to be considered saintly because he is properly situated. Bhagavad Gita 9:30. The only purpose of life is to be fully absorbed in thoughts of Krishna and his form, pastimes, activities, and qualities. If one is able to think of Krishna in this way 24 hours a day, he's already liberated. Svarupena vyavastitihi. Whereas materialists are absorbed in material thoughts and activities, devotees, on the contrary, are always absorbed in thoughts of Krishna and Krishna's activities. Therefore, they are already on the platform of liberation. One has to think of Krishna with full absorption at the time of death. Then he will certainly return home, back to Godhead, without a doubt. The verse is beginning with the address. Idam is the pronoun, this. Idam hi yogeshwara yoga naipunam. So this is a pronoun referring to the previous verse. And in the translation, this is the explanation of the yogic process spoken by Lord Brahma Hiranyagarbha. So I'd like to read the previous verse, especially there are people here that didn't read the previous verse. And, in fact, previous two verses, 11 and 12. The 11 is a prayer to, or an address to Narayana, incarnation of the Supreme Lord. He is the most self-controlled and self-realized. He is free from false prestige, and he is the asset of persons who have no material possessions. And that verse is not in poetry, it's in prose line. Uparata anat myamya anat myaya. Uparata anat myaya. Having no attachment for this material world. Uparata anat myaya. So, Narayana Rishi have no attachment for this material world, and they exemplify, according to this verse, whereas the perfectional stage of life, of course, Narayana is the Lord, and Nara, that's his associate. It's the same as Arjuna and Krishna, Narayana. He is the spiritual master of all Paramahamsas, who are the most exalted human beings, and he is the master of the self-realized. Let me offer my repeated obeisances at his lotus feet. So there's some reasons why, or glories of the Supreme Lord that help one absorb one's mind in his lotus feet, which is what this verse is speaking about. Then text 12, Narada, the most powerful saintly sage, also worships Narayana by chanting the following mantra. This is in the translation itself. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the master of the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of this visible cosmic manifestation, yet he is completely free from false prestige. Although to the foolish he appears to have accepted a material body like us, he is unaffected by bodily tribulations like hunger, thirst, and fatigue. Although he is the witness who sees everything, his senses are unpolluted by the objects he sees. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto that unattached, pure witness of the world, the Supreme Soul, the Personality of Godhead. So all of that is idam. This process of mystic yoga, to connect with the master of mystic yoga, Yogeshwara, is the explanation of the yogic process as given by Hiranyagarbha, or Lord Brahma. Hiranyagarbha Bhagavan Jagadayat. Jagada, he spoke. So, the most powerful Lord Brahma spoke these words that explains the process of transcendence or liberation. And then, at the time of death, yad antakale, at the time of death, all yogis give up the material body with full detachment simply by placing their minds at your lotus feet. That is the perfection of yoga. So there's a mechanical and there's a devotional process for fixing one's mind upon the lotus feet of the Lord. And the mystic yoga process permits one to achieve liberation or transcend material influences, even while embodied and being in the material atmosphere, by fixing the mind upon the Supreme Lord. Like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 6, Dhyana Yoga, same principle, fix your mind upon me. And then he goes on to say, of all the different systems of yoga, the best of all is bhakti. Shadhavan bhajate yomam. So bhajate, very important. Not only faith is required, but then practical activity that exhibits and demonstrates that faith and further purifies the mind and senses and demonstrates to the world what the standard is, or the ideal way of life of bhakti yoga. In the purport, there's two references. Madhvacharya speaking about even if one has been sinful, the process is still effective. That's good news, because we're in the age of Kali, and just by taking birth in this age of Kali, there is sinfulness is abundantly pervasive around us, and being influenced by that, there is not a living entity in contemporary society anyway that is sinless. So then for that sinfulness, there's contamination and implication in matter. But even if that has been the case, if one takes up this process, this verse spoken by Madhvacharya, or written, one who very seriously practices devotional service during his lifetime, in order to understand the constitutional position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so that's Sambandh again, to understand the constitutional position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that means he's the source of everything, including us, and everything that we can see or think of, or can't see or can't even think of, he's the source of it all. And we should serve him. Prabhupada once said, Krishna consciousness is very simple. God is very great. We are very small. Therefore, we should serve him. This is Krishna consciousness. Any questions? And then there's elaborations on that, like these two preceding verses. Fix the mind upon he who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is a delight, a stimulation of love to recite the various and unlimited glories of the Supreme Lord, some of which are presented. And there's a tendency, oh, I've heard that one before, and just breeze over it like, you know, okay, what's new? But if we hear properly, then many things. It helps us appreciate his glories. It certainly makes a distinction between us and him. He's not just up there. He's everything. And we're... It invokes knowledge, and with that detachment, and invokes humility with spiritual conception of humility, that is how tiny we are in comparison to the Supreme Great and so forth. And then what's the fruit of that? Well, one's mind then becomes, or at least the possibility, if we take up the process properly, the mind can be absorbed in the Personality of Godhead. Please remember, Thursday evening, we discussed 7.1 Bhagavad Gita, and 7.1 Bhagavad Gita is where Krishna says to Arjuna, I am now going to explain to you how to, one of the favorite phrases of the devotees, and they ask questions, how to. So Krishna gives the how to, fix the mind upon him. He fulfills his promise, we just have to receive the message carefully. It's easier to ask, because the inquisitiveness is good, but the answer, if the answer is already there, read it carefully and read it again and read it again. Not like, oh, I've read that one again, what's new? Let it go in the heart. Let it go deeply. How to fix the mind upon the Lord. So our primary process, the Bhagavat Dharma process, is, as we've been discussing all weekend, hearing and chanting about the Supreme Lord. It's the means. It's a very nice means. And it's the means for fixing the mind upon the Supreme Lord, because there's dirty things presently in the mind, which the mind has a tendency to go to. And maybe not even dirty things, just temporary things. But that's also dirty things, because it takes the mind away from the transcendent Lord. for hearing his glories regularly and, for that matter, always. That's the statement being made. Guaranteed, the mind can be then fixed, and guaranteed liberation. So, to amplify the even if one is sinful, Prabhupada quotes 9:30 Bhagavad Gita, and then he emphasizes once again, if one is able to think of Krishna in this way 24 hours a day, he is already liberated. Swaropena Vyavastati. There was a little discussion on the side yesterday. What does it mean, go back to Godhead? Part of it is what's said just here, back to Godhead is now. Not like when you leave your body, you go back to Godhead. That's another one. And it's right in the purport also. One has to think of Krishna with full absorption at the time of death, and he will certainly return back home, back to Godhead, without a doubt. But then there's back to Godhead before you leave your body, which is fixing your mind upon the personality of Godhead. Because you won't go back to Godhead unless you go back to Godhead here. Unless your mind is fixed in the personality of Godhead. And then, so the body is utilized in Krishna's service, and its pains and pleasures are initially tolerated and eventually transcended. Just go on. Like we were discussing about Prabhupada's tolerance of and transcendence of pain. His body was aging and ailing and not working anymore. He continued anyways. So, and we can face obstacles and continue anyways. How? Mind fixed, not just by being a stoic, I can take pain, but by fixing the mind upon the personality of Godhead through this wonderful process of hearing and chanting. Wonderful process of hearing and chanting. Wonderful process. And this reference is, now going back to Godhead in this lifetime, he is already liberated, is the reference is Swaropena Vyavastati. And that comes in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 10. And the first verse of Chapter 10 is a statement by Shukadeva Goswami. What are the 10 topics of Mahapurana, Srimad Bhagavatam? And one of them is liberation. So he lists the 10, then he starts to describe very briefly each of them. And this verse is reference to the liberation one. And muktir hitvanyata rupam. Muktir hitvanyata, when gives up the body. Hitva is giving up. Anyata, otherwise, rupam, form. So in this life and when you give up the body, so it's liberation and liberation. So liberation doesn't just mean like, say, a Western conception of liberation is after this life I'll go to the good place. You know, salvation kind of idea. And you know, the notion of salvation, commonly Western conception, is heaven. They think of heaven in China also. It's a very different kind of heaven than Christian heaven. It's a very different kind of heaven than the Vedic heaven, but it's like some conception of the better place, heaven, salvation. Go to the good place. And then there's the more sterile conception of merging and losing your identity and becoming one with the Supreme kind of notion. It's also in the West. It's not articulated as clearly, but that's the notion, impersonalism. Take modern science, for example. It's like sterile impersonalism. Where does everything come from and where does everything go to? From, you know, nothing. Or whatever the language they want to, you know, singularity. That's where everything comes from. And then kaboom, a big bang, and time, it dissipates, and it's nothingness again. Impersonal, just a variety of same old, same old. But, so the Vedic conception of liberation is beyond the stage of oneness with the Supreme, losing identity and merging in the oneness of nothingness. Yummy. There's the Vedic the Vaishnava conception, and that is we resume our awakened state of pure consciousness of serving Krishna, which with mind fixed upon him, just as Krishna says in the 12th chapter Bhagavad Gita, with mind absorbed in me, with intelligence fixed in me, surely you will come to me. You're already situated within me. Without a doubt. So, the translation of that part of it's 2:10:6. So the first verse is what the 10 subject matters, and this is the liberation one. The merging of the living entity along with his conditional living tendency with the mystic lying down of the Mahavishnu is called the winding up of the cosmic manifestation. That's death. It's not transcendence. It's what all conditioned souls do. The matter goes back to its elemental, undifferentiated pradhan state, and the living entities enter within the body of Mahavishnu in a susupti state. They're not literally merged. Everything, time is withdrawn by the Supreme Lord. And so when time is withdrawn, everything stops because you need time for things to happen. So when he withdraws his time energy, then everything collapses, the cosmic manifestation, and the living entities then resume or go back to this susupti state, deep sleep, where individuality is suspended, karma is suspended, everything stops. The living entity doesn't go out of existence or lose his individuality, it's just suspended. And then again, creation. So, but beyond that, liberation is the permanent situation of the form of the living entity after he gives up the changeable, gross, and subtle material bodies. Of course, one can give up the changeable, gross, and subtle material bodies without dying. What's that? It's a state where say it two different ways, they become spiritualized. Fully spiritualized. So the contact with one so situated acts in a spiritual way. The body, even the gross body of a pure devotee, it's still subject to decaying and death and all those things, but it acts fully spiritually. And the subtle body, mind, intelligence, and our dear friend, false ego, they also dissolve. I like that word. Like the image in my mind is an Alka-Seltzer tablet you put into water and it just dissolves. It's there, but you don't see it. It's just mixed in with the water. It dissolves. So the elements of mind, intelligence, false ego, they don't cease to exist. They just don't. They're not covering the soul as is the case in the conditioned state. And then instead, the spiritual faculty of thinking, feeling, and willing
functions of mind and discernment, intelligence. They're operative. Seeing intelligently how to attain Krishna, how to get to Krishna, how to utilize this and that, the other thing, and how to deal with different circumstances in service to Krishna. And Krishna supplies that. Spiritual intelligence. Tatami buddhiyogam tam. Enamam upiyanti. In sense of self, Krishna's servant. And in a more mature stage, at that particular form. Svarupena vyavastati. Exactly what the verse is saying. It's that the language is simple, but it's full. And progressively, as one matures in bhakti, just like the dhyana yoga stage is just even fixing the mind upon, in a mechanical way, upon the lotus feet of the Lord, there's connection with Krishna. That's what makes the yoga feature of it. Otherwise, it's something else. It's not yoga. Yoga means that there's some touch of bhakti. And bhakti means, bhakti is an expansion of the internal potency. Bhakti Devi is an expansion of Srimati Radharani, Ladini Shakti. So to have yoga, there has to be some bhakti. And when bhakti just becomes rich and thick and full, then it's pure and mature. And then that stage is during this lifetime, back to Godhead, and after the body is finished, back to Godhead. Or whatever Krishna wants to do in some other position of service somewhere. Back to Godhead. Always with Krishna, back to Godhead. Always with Krishna. So I'm going to end because I have to catch a flight. And they're not going to wait for me because I was giving Bhagavatam class. So any comments or questions? Yes.
Hey, Krishna Maharaj. I have a question in regards to the chapter, the text we went over today in class. I know in the morning when before we chant, we usually... One of the 10 offenses is to commit sinful activities on the strength of chanting the holy names.
Right.
And how the Bhagavad Gita chapter of text that you had read had...
Hold the microphone a little closer.
Okay.
Good.
The Bhagavad Gita text that you read spoke about how if one commits abominable activities but is engaged in devotion...
Accidentally.
So there is some, I guess...
Qualifier.
Checking that. Yeah, basically my question was in regards to if someone were to, you know...
Intentionally,
then it wouldn't be contradictory to
the
actual verse. That
yeah, it's the word is maybe even better, is circumstantial.
Okay.
Jai Jagannath wants to qualify that. Go ahead, give him the microphone. You have two verses, what?
Verses.
Go-to
verses when I get despondent or depressed. And one of them is in the 11th canto, chapter 20, which is entitled Pure Devotional Service, verse number 27 and 28, where Krishna, he speaks about, the verse goes like this, having awakened faith in my narrations, knowing, being disgusted with material sense gratification, knowing that all activity leads to sense gratification and sense gratification leads to misery, and he's also trying to give it up, but still he's unable to give it up completely. My devotees should remain happy and continue to engage in devotional service with faith and determination. And even though he is sometimes engaged in unfavorable activities, he sincerely repents that and carries on with his devotional service. So in this verse, it speaks about a devotee who's The language, the specific Sanskrit word is anishwaraha, which means he's not in control. So due to the force of previous karmic activity, he's kind of forced into sinful affairs.
Yes.
Although he's unwilling. And because, this is, of course, the first sentence of the purport says this describes the beginning stage of pure devotional service. So it seems here that a person can be engaged, not can, like, deliberately as such, but due to the force of the flow of karma, he's engaged in sinful activities and also chanting the holy name.
Yes.
So that also seems not contradictory. So I was wondering if you could describe or not.
That's why I changed the word or the adverb from accidentally to circumstantially. And I'll make it really simple how Prabhupada illustrates. Now this is speaking to his, you know, early fledgling 22nd Avenue audience. He used the example of smoking cigarette. He says, supposing someone is accustomed to smoking cigarette and they give it up, and then they're in a circumstance where others are smoking cigarettes, so they smoke a cigarette. That's an example of this. It was a willful act. You know, they know it. They know all the things that are good and not good, and they do it anyway. So that's an example that Prabhupada gave. So circumstantial, and all of the qualifiers that you gave, they regret. They know better. They're wishing to go away from, and nonetheless they do anyway. So it's circumstantial. But the contrast is like sinning on the strength of chanting. It's okay. There's this bad habit. I have a tendency for this bad habit. But I chant Hare Krishna, so it's okay. Maybe a little regret, but it's okay because I chant Hare Krishna. Krishna will help me. Here I go. That's different. Does that help? Yes, Krunaniti.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I have a very inquisitive to know something about the death, at the time of death. There is a question I am always getting doubt. Thing is that, if we remember one in Bhagavatam.
If we do what?
In Bhagavatam.
I heard the word Bhagavatam. What's the word before the word Bhagavatam?
Remember one king was there.
One king?
Yeah. He particularly waited for a certain time, like, you know, at a daytime, at auspicious time, then he pushed his life here through the
Brahmarandra,
right? Then he gave up his life. My question is it not kind of suicide? Because we have lifespan, but we want to forcibly will give up the life for auspicious time.
It's a little different. It's certainly, what the similarity is, it's a willful act, but the consciousness is not like people who do suicide. Oh, I'm feeling despondent. What's the use? Let me, you know, just finish my misery. And the other is, I want to go to the good place. I want to go to Krishna. And, you know, not anybody can do that. It's an aspiration in a very rarefied quality of goodness. It's not a very deep, dark quality of mode of ignorance. And so the destination is different. Destination is different because the consciousness is different. You have something? Who has the microphone? We have a question over here and we have a question over there. She's very enthusiastic. I see your hand. But we're going to take this one over here first.
Krishna Maharaj. My question is like over here, but I'm over here.
Okay.
I just want to get clarity on the tattvas. I'm not under any illusion about my position.
Okay.
The question specifically has to do with Uddhava.
Uddhava.
And I find it very intriguing, especially the pastime when he goes to Vrindavan with Krishna's message.
That's a nice pastime.
And I was just thinking this point about absorption in Krishna, what we're chanting, we could be attracted to a certain story. And the main characters in that story, you know, it's Krishna, of course, and his devotees also. And I'm wondering if, like, in the course of our chanting, if we're thinking about these incidents, I guess my question is, does it have to be complete absorption in just Krishna?
Does it have to be what?
Does it have to be complete absorption in Krishna? Or does that also include, like, the activities involving his pure devotees? Can that also be the meditation? Thinking about, say, like Uddhava and Uddhava going to Vrindavan and, you know, what he was experiencing. So then the absorption is not exactly...
Are you specifically speaking about while chanting japa? Or kirtan? Well, gee. while chanting japa, what is the seva? The seva is absorption in the name. No, the name is everything. Harir Nam Eva Kevalam. So if one can somehow become absorbed in the name, since the name is everything, and some particular attraction for the everything Krishna might be this pastime, Uddhava coming, etc. What's important is that one doesn't lose the absorption in the name while some inspiring appreciation of a pastime of Krishna and Krishna's devotees. It's not the Krishna devotee part any more than it is the Krishna part, because we know that from Canto 1, Chapter 7, when Sutta Goswami begins speaking Krishna Katha by speaking about the Pandavas. Speaking about the Pandavas is Krishna Katha. Speaking about Uddhava is Krishna Katha. So it's not so much Krishna versus his Krishna's pure devotees. That's not so. That's fine. Is the absorption in the holy name getting slackened as I then think of something other than the name? So it's absorption in the name, which is everything, and some aspect of Krishna becomes an inspired mood and contemplation while chanting, and my absorption isn't distracted from the name, but it's just a feature of the unlimited, all-attractive Krishna. Okay? Okay, the enthusiastic Mataji gets a chance to express herself.
Thank you, Maharaj. I've been pondering on verses 930 and 931 of Bhagavad Gita, and I'm trying to understand that in the context of the challenges our Gurukulis face. I've seen in our movement, our children born in the movement, they're very, very devotional when they're really small, but something happens when they hit their teens.
Yeah, what happens?
I'm really puzzled by this phenomenon, because I see in my own community that they take to all kinds of intoxication,
yeah,
and they have lived.
What went wrong? That's your question, right?
Right. Okay. And they even have kids living together. So I'm really puzzled by this. Could you please help me? And second most important question after that
second
is...
Second most important question.
Yeah. How can I be helpful in spite of being puzzled by this phenomenon?
What was the second most important? Oh, let's do the second one. Come on over here with the microphone because she may be tempted to say something again. I'm looking at the clock, and the clock says I'm going to have to give a short answer. So you'll be satisfied if I give a short answer? Thank you. Be a good example. Best is be a good example. Carry such devotion for Krishna in your heart. Think of it this way. If Prabhupada was in that same situation, what would happen? And I'm in that situation, it's not happening. There's a big difference between me and him. So let me become more exemplary and more fixed in devotion so that whatever I do or say or just my existence and my presence has a more profound effect. Yeah? That's the best thing you can do. And, you know, why something and then later something else? Well, different ways of saying the same thing. In short, it just didn't go in. But something went in. It's an indelible impression that isn't lost. It's the eternal benefit of the soul. But there's contaminating influences, and because the activities in childhood and Gurukula or whatever were nice, it was on the mind level and not so much, you know, acting from the soul level. So how do you do that with a child? How do you do that with an adult? That's the challenge. So we've been speaking over the weekend, at least trying to, about, you know, internalizing the message, you know, from a spiritual conception. And I know children that have a spiritual conception. They're children, and they behave, you know, in childlike ways. But I know some children that have a very clear spiritual conception. They can articulate it, not just like, you know, push the button and it comes out, but mechanical. But, you know, they have a clear understanding. I could give examples, but that's what's wanted from the teacher, the parent, the community, is to impart spiritual conception. And unless the spiritual conception is there, there's going to be another kind of movement besides move towards the spiritual conception. Especially if it's like mechanical and done on the mental platform, then the mind starts to move when they get a little older. You know, puberty and all that nice stuff. And, whoa, what's out there? And kind of thing. But it's never lost. I know some circumstances were like what you described, and, you know, growing into young adulthood, craziness, and then grounded again. Because it's there. No loss. And then, you know, and as Narada says to Vyas, that impression is never lost. And so when that misery of the material sojourn tells them it wasn't fun, they know that there is an alternative, and because they felt it to some degree at least, and in some cases, at least cases I'm aware of, they resume the, you know, now from a more deeply appreciating bhakti platform than when they were children, just doing because somebody said, okay kids, let's do this. Okay. And they do this. Okay. Gotta end. Thank you very much, Prabhupada Ki.